Cool. I'm the Accessibility Collective lead. My pronouns are she, her, and I'm super excited to host these three people today. So I kind of want to start with the quote that I saw when I was given all these resources about what was happening, and that is, post-secondary students deserve to study in an accessible, inclusive, collaborative, and non-adversarial environment. UBC claims a reputation for equity and inclusion, but fails to live up to these ideals for the 25% of its students who identify as disabled. UBC must implement universal design and learning, or in brackets UDL, frameworks. As they have done with other equity-owned groups, they must also create a disability task force to identify shortfalls in disability equality and formalize recommendations to create the inclusive environment UBC aspires to. So I kind of take this as like, I write a lot of papers. I'm a philosophy student. I write a lot of papers. This is the abstract of access for all in my head. Would any of you like to go ahead and kind of elaborate on that?
Yeah, so that's actually a quote from the Disability Affinity Group, I believe, which is the staff association of the Association of Disabled sort of staff and faculty members. And I think that does a very good job of essentially outlining the broad aims of the Access for All project, which is that it's not just about lecture capture. Lecture capture is nice. Lecture capture is very important. I think everyone can agree that lecture capture is good whether you're ill, whether you have a disability, or whether you just don't fancy going to a lecture on a Monday morning at 9. But Access for All goes beyond that. It's very much about designing things so we don't need to campaign for lecture capture, so that sort of accessible attendance is built into the way syllabuses and pedagogies are designed. And as I said, as part of sort of implementing that, a major thing we are asking for, and that staff have asked for a long time, is a separate disability task force that's separate from the accessibility committee, which isn't working for reasons I can get into later.
Do you mean the the Center for Accessibility when you say
I
that?
mean the governance body that is the accessibility committee that sits under the Board of Governors.
And that is not UBC wide.
That is UBC wide. It's not working
Okay,
for
awesome.
reasons I can outline later. So
if it was working, I feel like we'd know about
but
it.
Yes, if it was working, we wouldn't
if it
need
was
to
working
do
we really wouldn't
this.
be here right now.
Yes. Please, I'm happy to hand off to Celeste or Diana if either of you want to expand on that.
Well, I think the main thing, just as Josh says, is of course recorded lectures really important, really key, but we've kind of split our aims into two sort of segments. So the other really important half is just kind of increasing disability presence within the institution. So that will look like the Disability Task Force, as Josh mentioned, but just more awareness in the actual infrastructure. So UDL is a big part of that. We would love to
Can you
have.
define that?
So universal design for learning. Sometimes I think people get caught up on the term universal there. So instead of trying to look for one blanket way to learn, UDL seeks to provide things like multiple ways to access assignments. So you would be able to choose, for example, between maybe writing a written test or doing a sort of project or giving an oral presentation to kind of showcase your learning. So it's just trying to make sure that everyone can access the same kind of learning aims, learning outcomes, with a way that'll work for them.
Awesome. And this is something that the UDL, you would like to have available for all students. Okay.
UDL is very much a pedagogical practice. It's a way of designing your syllabi, of the assessment methods you choose, the way you choose to deliver your lectures and seminars. As we said, it's a lot more than lecture capture, and it's something that sort of it encapsulates all parts of the learning process, rather than just turning up and sitting in a large lecture hall for an hour and a half.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I do not have a physical or invisible disability, but I even as a student who is very much so able-bodied and does not have a disability, really struggle with some learning styles sometimes, and I can't imagine how difficult it would be to have that force upon you if you were someone with a learning disability or an invisible disability. Like, there are so many factors that make learning inaccessible other than just like what's being taught.
I'll say what you've just said is actually a situational disability. Like, that's something that I think people, I don't hear a lot about, but, like, situational disability can be anything from, like, being on your phone while walking across a sidewalk and not being aware. It is, I guess it lines more with, like, the social view of disability. So if if it is challenging to you, that is a disability. It's the access itself is.
Yeah.
So it really is everybody. I guess is my point.
Yeah.
It's, yeah.
Yeah, I think a lot of people fail to realize that. And, like, this is, like, something that actually really frustrates, not to get too personal on my own show, but this is something that really frustrates me when people hear that I, like, do the Accessibility Collective. I'm like, oh, join Accessibility Collective. And they're like, I'm going to join music, or I'm going to join arts. I'm like, oh, no one cares about people with disabilities. But the thing is, when you care about people with disabilities and you care about what they're saying, you're also just helping the general population. Like, a lot of these things that people with disabilities should have and are equitable are also things that would just benefit everyone.
I want to speak on that, actually, because, you know, we've always told when we do something, you know, education is the great leveler. Education is very important, you know, but both my parents were the first people in their families to go to university. And that, just going to university, having that education opened a lot of doors for them.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, if you make university inaccessible, you are basically saying to a not insignificant portion of the population, there is a limit to how far you can progress in life. There is a limit to how much you can achieve. And I largely thought we were meant to be past that as a society. We should sort of be progressing beyond this. Well, if you have this difficulty, if you're disabled in this way, pack it up, go home, university isn't for you. And that right now is what we are saying with the way we choose to approach learning and stuff. And that's not particularly good if we want everyone to be able to fulfill their full potential. And there are many people, you know, that everyone has potential, and just because a specific way of doing things doesn't allow them to fulfill that potential doesn't mean that it can't be fulfilled in other ways, to mean that they can also go and do great things. I mean, when Stephen Hawking was at Oxford, they had to make massive changes to the way they taught, to the way they did their lectures and all of that to make sure he could go and do those things. And we think we can all agree that Stephen Hawking turned out, he did all right. He did okay.
Yeah, you know, he contributed to society in a meaningful way.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing, is that by making it accessible to everyone, we help society because it's more people who can go on to contribute.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Could I add on to what Josh was saying? Specifically, I find it's always, like, so shocking about what has and hasn't been done already. I have only just started TAing, and as a result, I asked for accommodations because I need them in order to TA. And my department went, yeah, that was on our to-do list. I guess we'll do that now. And it's like, oh, okay, I wish you'd done it before I was here, but thank you. So it's, I don't know, it's just shocking, like, things that seem very basic.
Yes.
I also just want to jump in there and say, like, how far Canada is behind internationally on this sort of stuff. I'm an exchange student from the UK.
UK does it better.
I was genuinely appalled when I came here. Like, genuinely, I was shocked at just how bad things were. Like, it was a massive wake-up call for me, because Canada is perceived as, you know, quite a liberal, progressive place by a lot of the rest of the world. And then I came here and basically found out that coming from a country which is, you know, not exactly currently renowned for its progressive attitudes towards certain things, just how behind things were here on disability rights and giving people the stuff they need. And so the amount of fight I had to do just to get the stuff that I already had doctor's notes for, required right now to get a new diagnosis every couple of years, as if I get less autistic when every couple of years, and you have to dip into your pocket for $5,000+.
Oh my God.
That's how much autism diagnosis is. Wow. There is no one in BC offering it on MSB, not a single physician. Yeah. And because they're saying, because LR7, university policy LR7 says it has to be every 3 years, your diagnosis being within 3 years. If you were fortunate enough to get enough diagnosed as a child, unfortunately, it's time into your dip into your pocket again and find $5,000 when you come to UBC.
Yeah, that is something that I actually did. I realized last year, and I feel like when I think about Canada, you know, I'm so lucky. I'm so grateful, and I am very lucky and grateful in so many other ways. The funding that people with disabilities get every month is about $2,000. Do you know how much more people got for CERB during COVID? The money's there. It's just not being allocated. And I think hearing that was a massive wake-up call to me for, like, just how little Canada cares about people with disabilities and how little we don't want them just to survive, but to, like, have lives and thrive and contribute to society by not giving them resources. We are actively holding them back. So I want to ask this question, like, what is Access for All? Like, what is the campaign? What we talked a little bit about what the mission statement is, but, like, at its very core, what are you trying to achieve?
Just like with those UDL principles, right, the aim is to make sure that as many people can access post-secondary education as possible, right? I didn't want to be the one to bring up COVID, but that is, you know, that was a great illustration, I think, for a lot of us, very, very briefly, that, hey, a lot of slightly more accessible learning is possible. We can just get up and rethink the way that we do this. And seeing everything go back to the way it was within the institution was just so disappointing. So I think, you know, holding on to those parts and figuring out how can we make sure people can access education and can be there? How can we make sure everybody that needs to be in the room is in the room? You know, there should not be any kind of barrier to that.
What are some of the, like, asks? What are we asking for?
Yeah, well, we're asking for, as we mentioned before, recorded lectures for all required courses. So every required course should have at least one section that is recorded or available online in some sort of multi-access way. You would think that that would be the bare minimum, that that would be available already.
It's not.
But it's not, no. So I think that is the main thing that a lot of people are hearing as a takeaway of Access for All. But also, do you want to jump in, Josh?
Yes, I've just got our petition up here. I'm just going to read. Basically, we have 9 asks, and we've got a BC one, and so one for British Columbia, because this is a British Columbia-wide thing. It was started by people at SFU, and I want to give a big shout-out to SFU for kicking this whole thing off almost a year and a half ago now, I believe.
Their school looks like a prison, but they're doing good.
They've got the walkway of death or something.
Yeah, it's terrible. Well, their whole school was literally designed by a prison architect.
Yeah.
But talk about just, like, mental accessibility. Anyways, continue.
They're doing bits on disability, so I'm not going to go to BS. So first one, the BC-wide one, is basically UDL-informed online hybrid or multi-course sections for all required classes, labs, and tutorials. Where that is completely impracticable, like where basically I know you need to run an in-person lab, which we understand that needs to happen for some cases, then we want an institutional accessibility fund to basically help do that, because there's no point asking departments to dip into their own pocket when a lot of departments have next to no money anyway for this stuff, so that it also takes part of more funding. We need support for professors and TAs for navigating these delivery modes, because as you know, TAing is rough. And we also want UTA. We also want graduate student oversight bodies to give guidance for grad students. We want the institutions in BC to get involved in Access for All and help lobby the provincial government, because a lot of this stuff is actually in their mandate letters. It is in the rules themselves that they were required after COVID to go back to in-person only lectures. If you read UBC's mandate letter, it's there. So this goes right to the top in BC. We also want support for faculty who choose to teach online rather than in person, because that support isn't there right now, is what we're hearing from DAG. We want training for appropriate UDL and lecture capture technology, and end punitive attendance policies. They don't work, they're kind of unfair. I'll read a quote later on just how bad they've got. We also want a public strategic plan, and finally we want free face masks back for people who, you know,
please,
don't want to get ill. I think that's
they're
a reasonable
so
goal in life. not to get really ill. Also, less freshers flu is good for everyone. And also, we want a disability task force at every uni. because the biggest thing we heard from DAG, which is the staff disability group, is that the UBC Accessibility Task Force Accessibility Committee isn't working. DAG told me that they've not agreed to pay their chair yet. They were told, another person from DAG told me they've been told to treat it as a labour of love, which is...
What's that supposed to mean?
Well, exactly. And so we want a proper disability task force led by people with disabilities so that our voices are heard, nothing about us without us at the end of the day. So those are our main asks. I will shut up and let other people talk now. So.
No, that was very powerful, those 9 asks. And I think that having this campaign and it's in its way, I really don't know what the word for this is, spiritual, in the sense that you're going, there are some real issues here that need to be addressed with the spirit of something. And then you've got the more tangible, physical, this is what we want. We want these met, every single one of these things. We're going to take a break right now, but when we come back, I'm going to talk a little bit more about this disability-friendly policy and also where Access for All might go forward.
Do you love being caffeinated? And do you hate that greedy, soulless international conglomerates are succeeding in the cutthroat world of coffee? Sounds like local coffee roasters Trek Coffee is for you. Trek Coffee is 100% indigenous and military veteran owned and operated. Let's keep small businesses thriving. Stop by Sunshine Convenience on 4th, the Super Value on Commercial, or grocery checkout in the Nest to pick up some Trek coffee today.
February 24th marks 1 year since Russian full-scale war against Ukraine and 9 years of Ukrainian resistance against Russian invasion and imperialism. 1 year full of unimaginable horror and extreme resiliency. We at the Ukrainian Student Union at the University of British Columbia would like you to remind that the war is not over. Ukrainians are still suffering. Please consider donating to the government organization United 24, launched by the President of Ukraine, as the main venue for collecting donations to cover the most pressing needs. Visit u24.gov.ua for more details. Glory to Ukraine.
Welcome back. This is Nicole, and you are listening to All Access Pass, a show brought to you by CITR 101.9's All Accessibility Collective. So if you missed it, I'm here with Claire, Diana, and Josh. They are from the Disabilities United Collective, and we are talking about their hashtag Access for All campaign. So when I talked to the people from DUC last year, it was much smaller. It was, we want recorded lectures. And now there are 9 big requests that they're asking for. They want disability task forces at every university. They want change and they want equity and justice for students with disabilities. So Josh listed all 9 requests. And I have a question now. With this Access for All campaign, I see it, at least in my brain, I see universities adopting it and creating their own disability task forces and kind of addressing problems as they come up. But does that mean Access for All dies? Like, are you hoping that this will just spark change and end, or are you hoping it's going to remain an open thing where if a larger issue that is applying at every university comes up, Access for All can step in and be like, hey, we've done this before, we can do this again and make big requests?
I think right now I don't want to, jump the gun, as it were.
I feel like
it's
these are
opinions. Question.
It's a big question. I want to emphasise that this is part of a very big BC-wide effort. There are many universities across BC involved in this, alongside the National Education Association of Disabled Students. So this is a BC-wide and Canada thing. This is big. And the result of that is right now we are focused on our 9 aims. We want to get those.
Yeah.
After that, I hope, obviously, we keep working together. And whether that's under the banner of access for all or something else, I obviously don't want to prejudice that, but I definitely think there has been sort of a unification coming together of universities across BC, or at least disabled students across BC, we've not necessarily seen it from the universities yet, around the fact that this has to stop. Disabled students need to stop being an afterthought, and disabled staff as well. And so, yes, I think right now we are focused on our 9 recommendations and or demands, depending on how you wish to view them. But going forwards, obviously, hopefully in a perfect world, those are all achieved, and then I'm sure we will keep working together going forwards.
Awesome. So it kind of just sounds like you're trying to not jump ahead like I asked you to.
I'm hesitant to, you know, prejudice the outcome of conversations that will be had, because right now we are all very much focused on getting this across the line. The AMS is very much behind this and is going to BC Lobby Week to talk to the BC provincial government about this. They've put together a letter that other students' unions have signed across BC. So I don't want to start jumping ahead whilst the VP External Office is doing great work there in Victoria.
Awesome. The next thing I want to talk about is like, what is a disability-friendly policy? And I think Celeste might have some thoughts on this.
Specifically, I suppose, so on the break, I was explaining one of the things that I always hear as a caveat to this list, these 9 things. Specifically, we want hybrid options. We want alternate options. And there's always the... People always come back with, well, what about labs? What about things where you have to do it in person? And there are options if you're creative. I was talking to a professor because a lot of these issues also come from professors not having funding, not having the ability to, like, educate themselves in terms of how to do this.
Yeah, a lot of them still don't know how to use Zoom. I don't know how.
I mean, that's not understandable. Yeah. The Zoom sucks. Yeah.
Oh, no, I just said even Canvas. I've had props who are like, don't even want to learn.
Yeah, I mean, I don't either. So.
Fair enough, yeah.
But, like, one of the professors, as I was giving the caveat of, like, yeah, I understand that, like, there's not everything, the professor was like, well, why don't you just do the lab, like, with VR? Like, why don't you apply... Like, I don't know, in my opinion, why are we using the metaverse to sell Facebook stocks instead of, I don't know, teaching people how to do chemistry? So that's just one practical example. There are so many more. And I think the biggest thing is be creative.
So I'm going to sort of answer your question by starting off by not answering it.
Awesome.
I'm going to read out a quote from Corin Parsons, who's President of the Disabled Graduate Students Association, Director of Student Relations on Disability Affinity Group, and a member of the UBC Accessibility Committee. And Corin said, my most upsetting experience as a TA was when a student emailed me a picture of herself at the bedside of a dying relative because she was worried about being penalised for missing class and falling behind. Now, taking a step back from disability policy, taking a step back from university, just as a human being, if that policy does not make you sick in the depths of your stomach, something is wrong with you. The fact that the policies we currently have in place mean that people are spending the time, their last minutes with dying family members, making sure they can tick a box on a syllabus. And, you know, I've sat beside the bedside of dying family members. Those are some of the most precious moments you can get, and not to be spent ticking boxes so you don't get marks taken off you. So, firstly, disability-friendly policy is just about having policy that is designed around the basis of being a decent person and being nice to people, and not, and instead of adopting the policy of, right, maybe someone is lying to me, maybe, instead of thinking of how to avoid people doing things wrong, it's about enabling people to do the right things and giving students who, let's all be clear, are adults, this isn't high school anymore, students are adults, trusting them to take responsibility for their own learning and not putting in these sort of Kafkaesque and ridiculous policies that just hurt the most vulnerable people at our university.
I really, like, couldn't agree with that more. It transcends so much more than just people with disabilities. I have a friend who, 2 years ago, her father passed, and she was home in Ontario with him as he was being taken off life support. And when she came back, so she had missed the midterm, which was worth, I think, 30% of her grade or something like that. and the final was worth 60%, and the professor was like, look, I'm not going to give you a zero. I'm just going to transfer that 30% onto the final. So her final was worth 90%. And I sit here
no pressure.
And I, sorry?
No pressure.
Yeah, and I sit here and I and she asked, you know, could I do a different assignment to make up for that? Could I put that towards homework assignments? Like, is there extra credit I could do? And he was like, nope. She went to the department. The department said, well, it's in his jurisdiction. And all I can sit here and think is this person who is just experienced this profound loss is already stressed about letting their life slip, because life does not slow down for you when you have experienced grief or are experiencing grief. The last thing that she needed was to be given even more stress. So I just think that this story and what you just said, Josh, just really illustrates that this disability-friendly policy isn't just for those with disabilities. It's just a humane thing to do at its very core.
Absolutely. I just want to follow that up by reading the rest of Corinne's quote, which is that Corinne said, my proudest classroom achievement came when teaching my own course. I received an email from a student informing me that because I had structured the course in such an accessible way, he would not need to use his accommodation. That is the end goal. That is where we want to be.
That is really powerful.
Where you do not need accommodations because it is designed to be accessible to everyone. There is access for all. That's what we want. That is what disability-friendly policy is. It is a world where you do not need accommodations, where people are not having to go through the CFA, which I'm sure people here may have views on that process. That's where we want to be. And obviously that will may never happen, but it's about making as much progress towards that as possible. And so essentially that's what disability friendly policy is. Firstly, it is informed and progressed by people with disabilities or disabled people. Again, nothing about us without us. And secondly, it's just aimed at making the university, whether it's your lectures, whether it's making sure that a wheelchair can get through all the doors, whether it's making sure that when a lift's broken in a certain accommodation block, it is fixed relatively quickly, or that there are enough shuttles to take people around campus and the shuttle doesn't close when it's snowy. Things like that, so that the entire university can be used and everyone can use all the amazing facilities we have here, whether they're disabled or not. So that's what disability-friendly policy is. It's thinking about disability in every decision the university makes, and that's why we want a disability task force, because the most consistent thing you said, this is a quote from Corinne, who is on the university accessibility committee, and the most consistent thing we are hearing from staff, again, members of the Disability Affinity Group on the Accessibility Committee as well, is that the Accessibility Committee isn't working. It's not. If for whatever reason you want, it's not working as a committee, and that needs to change. And the university, in its comment to gave comment to the UBC, saying that, you know, they're working on upcoming accessibility plan. Spoke to members of the Accessibility Committee. They didn't know anything about it. Asked the AMS. Now, the VP AUA nor the VP External Office knew anything about it. They're basing it on STEAR, which is their Strategic Equity and Anti-Racism Framework. They didn't actually consult anyone on that, so that's already a red flag. Essentially, the people on the Accessibility Committee agree, but the bureaucracy of the university is, as I'm sure anyone who's used the university bureaucracy will know, deeply suffocating. And we need to make sure that when the university are announcing these things, that they're followed up on. And that means that we need a disability task force led by people with disabilities or disabled people, because without that, nothing else happens. That is the first step here from the university, and that is what we need to see.
Snaps.
Yeah. I also want to circle back to the anecdote that you shared, Josh, about the TA and that experience, because as a disabled student who would like to continue on into academia in English literature, by the way, so I will be waiting for your episode that talks about that.
You should come on.
You know, English, I'm not going to go on my tangent about that, but of course it's a discipline that has a lot of structural issues, and I think there's a lot of resistance to providing any kind of accommodations in that at the undergraduate level. But anyway, as someone who would like to TA in the future, I hate the idea of having to enforce rigid accommodations, you know, the way that they are set. You know, if a professor lays that out in their syllabus, I do not want to have to enforce that. That's a horrible position to be in. And I remember in a meeting I was in with the DAG, one of the members put it really succinctly, right, that like disabled undergraduates can become disabled graduate students who can then become disabled faculty members. And this does not stop at just the undergraduate level. So I guess speaking to your question way earlier about, you know, where does Access for All go from here? I can't say what, you know, capital A Access for All is going to do as a movement, but certainly there's so much beyond just the undergraduate level to fix within the academy.
Thinking about like what you were saying with like TAing, so I feel like one of my good qualities is that I'm stubborn. I say that like I love describing myself as stubborn because I wouldn't. But the thing is, I wouldn't, because if people want to like say, hey, you need to do this, I know what to say. Mm-hmm. I've navigated the corporate world of like babysitting executives and telling them why accessibility matters. I could do that with a professor. They're smarter. So like, but that's me. And I have like that experience. It's nerve-wracking. And like, what if you get failed? It's there's a constant threat and authority that is looming over people. And unfortunately, the attitude of like, I don't actually care, doesn't work for everybody.
Yeah.
Josh, would you like to hop in?
Yeah, I do. I very much want to emphasize that Access for All has been very much seen a lot of staff involvement. Mm-hmm. Everything I just said about the accessibility committee was told to me by staff.
Yeah.
I am not on the... I've never interacted with the accessibility committee. That is, you know, I am not in the position to be able to form my own opinion there. What I read out, what I said, was repeated verbatim from public minutes of a meeting we had with the staff, with DAG, which is the staff body. Staff have been very much involved in this. And I also think it's also about the way we teach stuff around disability in our lectures and stuff. For example, I'm doing a module on political thought right now, and we're going to do Kant in a couple of weeks' time.
What are you studying?
Poli-sci.
Okay.
I'm one of the nice poli-sci students. There's very few of us.
Everyone's favourite philosopher, Kant.
But Kant is always very obviously, and I say this in the nicest possible way, deeply autistic. Like, Kant is.
Yeah.
And there is a way you therefore have to teach that. And I know a student who took Poli 240 last year, who, you know, had many conversations with last year's Poli 240 lecturer about this. But the point is that there is, I think a lot of it is also the fact that when we teach certain things, we don't acknowledge the role disability played in, you know, bringing forth certain perspectives. And that also then plays into the other work we do on sort of, you know, bringing marginalised perspectives into the curriculum, mm-hmm. Decolonising the curriculum, feminising curriculum, all of that, that it plays into ensuring the marginalised voices are heard in the curricula that we are taught. And I think that's something that, you know, as I said, this is why Access for All sort of ended up branching out so broadly. And I would say that this version of Access for All is after things had to be pared back a bit to keep it manageable and achievable, because it's also very interconnected. And I am going to bang on about Disability Task Force again, because that's the one thing we heard from staff that they wanted. That was the big ask coming out of meetings with DAG especially. They said, you've got to have Disability Task Force to do this stuff. So there are disabled faculty as well. You know, I think they're yeah. Disabled faculty are often forgotten in this because we're students. But there are disabled faculty. They are amazing. They are doing a lot of work in a very challenging system. And it's important their voices are heard. So I wish someone from DAG could have joined us today. But, you know,
yeah, I know one.
They are employed, which is something that many students, you know, I can aspire to one day. The UK sort of had a great awakening on disability about 15 years ago, when everyone sort of seemed to realise all at the same time, hang on, maybe the way we were doing this wasn't particularly okay.
Yeah.
And that's where we get the Equalities Act. But I absolutely agree that, you know, there were challenges there as well. But yeah, Canada has a way to go. Yeah.
For sure. On that note, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to be right back to wrap it all up in a nice pretty little bow.
Are you tired of Big Brother bookstores trying to sell you some billionaire's favorite book or Heather's top picks? Then you should check out Vancouver Books. Vancouver Books is a new online family-run bookstore. A portion of their profits go to First Nations reconciliation and environmental projects in British Columbia. They provide their customers with the most interesting books in fine arts, signed first editions, First Nations photography, fine ancient books, occult, and so much more. They also provide carbon-free delivery to anywhere in the Vancouver area. So go to www.vancouverbooks.ca to check out Vancouver Books today. That's www.vancouverbooks.ca.
For your oral listening pleasure, please join me, Marguerite, Sundays at 9 a.m. for Classical Chaos, classical music from around the world, right here on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. We'll see you then.
Welcome back. You're listening to All Access Pass, a show brought to you by the Accessibility Collective at CITR 101.9 FM. And I am Nicole. So you better have just listened to that entire episode because it was rich. It was rich, I tell you. Access for All is a campaign that aims to make higher education accessible for everybody, not just students with disabilities. And I've got some tangible things that are coming in the future if someone would like to take it away.
Yeah, so for starters, feel free to join our Discord or message us on Instagram. You can even visit us on our website, ubcduc.ca. And yeah, just come by, ask us questions, sign our petition. It'll be awesome.
Yes, just to know that the petition link will be in the description, and you can also get it at change.org/access_4. That's the number 4_all. Please sign the petition. It makes a big difference with showing the university and just the wider world how much people care about this.
Yeah, and in terms of next steps, we would love a meeting with the president of UBC, the VP students, and any supportive people on the Senate and the board to reach out to us.
That's all. Just please sign the petition, and thank you so very much for listening.
Once again, nothing about us without us. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much to Celeste/Claire, Diana and Josh for coming on and making the time. Thank you so much again to the Disabilities United Collective for collaborating with me. It is a really wonderful way to talk about social justice within disabilities with students in a very promising local way. And you will hear more from me next week. All right, good night.
Lately I'm not feeling gotta go! Are we down with them?
No. They must have seen you.
I know that you're not too ambitious.
I don't have any friends, and you can too. Tune into Teachable Moments on 101.9 FM every Tuesday at 4 p.m. if you're a f***ing dork.
I specifically said no geeks.
But my mom says I'm cool.
The Sweetgrass Clan is a volunteer-based coalition that provides safety, security, and essential resources to the most vulnerable members of the downtown Eastside community. In addition to providing food and safety, the Sweetgrass Clan also connects people with advocates for housing, mental health counseling, and drug and alcohol detox. The Sweetgrass Clan is always looking for new volunteers to support the downtown Eastside community and are able to offer volunteers grocery gift cards and bus tickets as honorariums. If you would like to offer your volunteer support to the Sweetgrass Clan, you can reach out via email at abfrontdoor.org or visit abfrontdoor.org.
Now I haven't heard from him in days. your sleeping bag as a side effect.
Darling, looking at Is your mom obsessed with Vicks Vapor Rub?
So is Alice.
Are you too obsessed with Vicks Vapor Rub?
So are we.
Tune in to Viva Poru, el ungüento para el alma, every other Thursday at 4 p.m. here at CITR 101.9 FM.
A radio show dedicated to Latin awesomeness and culture. Hosted by yours truly, the one and only
DJ Bruja. And the other one and only
DJ D-Rod.
Featuring music genres like
salsa, sabrosura vintage, bolero, bossa, Latin indie, plus so much more.
Viva Peru, el invento para el alma, contains a high amount of llama content. DJ D-Rod and DJ Bruja are not responsible for a newly found llama obsession.
Hi, I'm Sukyun Lee. And you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, yeah, in Vancouver.
Good evening. You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM. This is Della speaking. And this is time for the Bamulat Show.